This week, a feature interview with Mitchell Crooks, the man who videotaped a brutal police beating in Inglewood, California in 2002. This is Bad Cop No Donut for the week of June 29th, 2006. I'm Ron Anisich with your weekly wrap-up of North American police brutality, misconduct, and corruption.
I actually never really saw the scene myself. I was more concerned with operating the camera. I knew something was going on, but I wasn't really sure, so I just ran out and flipped open the lid on the camera and just started videotaping. Immediately, I saw Donovan Jackson down on the ground with about four officers on top of him, being placed in handcuffs, and then picked up lethargically like a rag doll and slammed on the back of the police car. And then for no reason at all, just sucker punched in the face and then hauled off to the car. The most shocking thing was that he was in handcuffs when he got punched in the face and he was not resisting. He had been beaten so badly that, you know, there was no way he could even be resisting at that time. First, people had like weird reactions because they didn't really know all the facts and everything. But as soon as they found out Donovan was 16 and more of the tape got played to them on the air and the more interviews I did and the more that they dug deeper, you know, people began to get really upset at the situation. The videotaping has been effective in this situation because of the fact that people are equipped with cameras now. You have cell phones with cameras and they also take pictures as well. The video cameras have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller so people can carry them on their person. It's a nonviolent weapon. It's undeniable proof and it can't be twisted. In an age of Big Brother, it's good for a citizen to be armed with the truth.
4 years ago this week, Mitch Crooks was vacationing in Inglewood, California. When he heard a commotion outside of his hotel, he grabbed his video camera and started shooting. Crooks captured images of 16-year-old Donovan Jackson being abused by Inglewood police officers. One officer is shown striking the handcuffed child in the head. The images captured by Crooks were shown on television around the world. 10 years after the Rodney King beating, many viewers were shocked to learn how little had changed. Days after the videotaped beating, Crooks was arrested on several outstanding misdemeanor warrants, which were both many years old. He was arrested as he showed up at CNN's Los Angeles Bureau for an interview. He was badly beaten by police and then sent to jail for 6 months, where he was held in solitary confinement for more than 23 hours a day. Despite all of his difficulties after bringing his videotape to light, Crooks said he would do the same thing again if he was in a similar situation. I spoke with Mitch Crooks earlier this week.
And then when I come out and say, well, yeah, my video's been seen like probably just as much as the Rodney King video. I mean, people in the news media, people from like CNN, people, like major people were telling me, like producers and stuff, like this is the biggest news story since 9/11. And like I was like, get out of here. I was like, I didn't believe it. I was like, you're crazy. And they're like, no, this is the biggest news story since 9/11.
Yeah.
And there was quite a stagnant time in between there.
Yeah.
Because everybody was all shocked and everything. And I think that's what makes me more fearful, too, in a lot of ways, that, you know, I kind of took a shit on the police department, and everybody's supposed to be all loving the police department, you know, after 9/11. It's like, no. And I kind of separated and said, no, it was the firemen, folks. It wasn't the policemen.
It's July 2002. You're living in Las Vegas back then, right?
Yes.
And you go to Englewood, California, you're staying in a hotel, and you hear something going on outside your hotel room. Why don't you kind of pick it up from there?
Well, I originally thought, like, I had heard a lady screaming, so I thought it was like a, you know, kind of a fight or something outside. And I'd had my video camera with me. I didn't really think of like going out to videotape it, but when the lady had said don't resist, I thought, you know, that's probably a good reason to go outside and check it out, see what's going on. And she was screaming pretty frantically and like and saying a lot of keywords like don't fight back, don't do this, don't do all this. And I just grabbed my camera and just ran out as fast as I could and just started videotaping where she was screaming at. And what I saw was a bunch of officers surrounded around a basically handcuffing him. What had happened before I had started videotaping, I have no idea. I'm not going to even speculate on what happened before that. What I can tell you is that the only reason that the officers were there in the first place was because of expired tags of a parked car getting gas at a gas station. Just seems kind of ironic. I've never heard of police pulling people over for getting gas, basically, and having unregistered tags.
So you ended up catching a sequence of images which clearly shows the police striking a handcuffed teenager named Donovan Jackson. You didn't know Donovan Jackson.
No, I didn't know him at all. I had absolutely no connection to anyone in Inglewood whatsoever. And you know, when I started videotaping, I thought that, you know, I was too late, that pretty much most of the beating was over with. And so at the time when I saw him being placed in handcuffs and slammed up on top of the car and then sucker punched, I was like, you know, this is really serious, because, you know, everyone knows that once you become placed in handcuffs, you're in custody, and you're become property of the state, really, is, and they have an obligation to protect you, more of an obligation in some cases, in a lot of legal matters, to protect you than any civil type of situation or any type of police situation in normal society. You become the property of that state, and so therefore when you put somebody in handcuffs, you cannot strike them, you cannot punch them, and that's what I videotaped, and that was the infringement on the officer's part. That's where they crossed the line, and the officer was clearly out of control. I don't think many people argue that the officer wasn't out of control. It's pretty vivid that he's pretty angry, and some of the things that I've heard that he said at the scene, you know, indicate that he was probably either on steroids or just very angry at black youth or something. I really don't know, but he was clearly out of control.
Well, in order to film this, you have to have had, like, not only the steady hand, because I gather this was some kind of some distance away from you, but also I'm curious about what's going through your head as you're watching this. Like, how were you able to remain so separate from what you were seeing, that you were able to actually, like, keep videotaping it?
Well, I mean, I really didn't. It was kind of like one of those surreal type of situations. I really didn't think about. I didn't think about all of the things and everything that came about after the situation or during, or what risk I was taking in filming it. I just kind of, like, saw it for what it was. I just recorded it the best that I could, and when I was done recording it, and when I had seen that the officers had recognized me, you know, I made it a point to try to keep that tape and that camera separate from me, so if any police investigators came up to me, you know, to make sure that there was no, you know, I didn't lose the footage or anything. So I was pretty level-headed in thinking about the situation once it was done, but at the time, I really didn't think of, you know, should I be filming this? Should I not be filming this? Should I, you know, keep capture on, you know, these officers or this officer? Or, you know, I didn't really think of any of those things. I just kind of captured it as it was. And I remember, though, somebody saying that make sure that you get close-ups of the officers just in case, you know, there was any argument later on. So I did that, and that's when I had realized that the officers had turned back at me and gave me kind of like a serious scowl that, like, we know you're up there. We know you videotaped this, and this has gone beyond our control. You can actually see, like, the sergeant, the commanding officer on the scene, tell the rest of them, you know, he gets on his, like, radio and starts to tell, you know, like, central command or whatever, oh, we got a situation here, you know. And at that point, it was like, I shut the camera down. I put the videotape with another friend that was staying at the hotel. I put the camera with somebody else. When the police started to come in, there was about 7 officers, plain clothes and just blatant sheriff's officers, that came into the hotel and started combing through and asking everybody questions, and everybody knew I was the person that filmed it.
How many people were there in addition to yourself? Like you were with some friends, right?
There was probably about four people that actually like stood there and watched what was going on as I was videotaping it. But once, you know, I said I got the scowl, there was probably, I had met some people in the hotel, and there was probably about six or seven other people aside from that that were involved. And, you know, a couple of people told them they were all basically foreign backpackers because it was kind of a LAX kind of hostel kind of place.
Okay.
And so they had all pretty much realized, you know, what America was going through and what kind of, you know, situation we were all in. And, you know, they didn't even see the video. They didn't even hear none of it. They were just told, like, hey, put this tape and, like, hide it in your room. Don't tell the officers anything about it. And I had gone down, changed my clothes, just in case that the officers had recognized me, gone down to the pool with a beer. This is 4th of July weekend, just sat by the pool. Not one officer came up to me and asked me a single question, but yet they asked everybody around me, you know, who videotaped it. And surprisingly, I don't know if that the odds of that would happen a lot, but nobody said anything to the officers whatsoever, even though probably a majority of the people in that hotel knew I was the one that videotaped it. So
that's very lucky.
Yeah, that was like a unique type of thing. If the police had gotten a hold of the videotape and confiscated it from there,
no one would have ever seen it.
It would have been over with. Yeah, it would have been an argument with the Donovan Jackson and his family, and it would never have gotten press. It never would have been seen worldwide. So,
okay, so the police leave presumably after a certain amount of time, and what do you do next?
Well, I actually started making some phone calls and asking around to the local media networks and asking if they were interested in the tape. I'd actually gone down to NBC station where they taped the Tonight Show, and they were not interested. The guy actually said to me, he goes, is this guy famous? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, we're not interested in it. And I really didn't at that point know what I was doing in dealing with the media or anything. So I went back home, went back to sleep, and then started up the next day. And I went to, believe it was the WB network, or no, it was the UPN network, and asked them and thought, well, you know, it's a black network. Maybe they might be interested in the abuse that's going on in their community. And so I show it to them, and the guy tells me, you know, hey, you have two choices about what you want to do at this point. Either you can sell it to us exclusively, which is the same thing that the guy that sold the Rodney King video, which is a major thing that I kind of want to stress to people about copyright and everything as far as the media works, about how you can get screwed over. And the guy said, or you want to keep it. And I said, I want to keep it. I want to make sure that it's mine. You know, nobody else can use it however they want. And he goes, well, you're welcome to do that, but you can come in and talk to us tomorrow about an exclusive license. He's all, but in the meantime, I suggest that you go to the WB. So I go to the WB. They offer me a $1,000 contract, which was very insulting because they were the same ones that bought the Rodney King video from George Holliday. And they had paid $50,000 off from the get-go for that video. That's what they offered to him from the get-go. They offered me $1,000. So it was very insulting, but I didn't take the offer from them. And, you know, George Holliday has made over quite a few million dollars off of that videotape, which is nothing. Like, I have no hopes of ever, like, getting that, even though he sold this thing exclusively to them. So, you know, it became a whirlwind of, you know, interviews with CBS Early Show. I didn't sleep for, like, 4 days. You know, there was interviews in England, interviews in with television all over the world, Germany, Iran, Israel, just everywhere, all over the world, Korea, all over. And so it was basically like this weird kind of whirlwind kind of, oh my gosh, this thing's turning into a huge big thing. Then it turned into people like Johnny Cochran, and then people like Maxine Waters and Jesse Jackson. to step up and started getting involved in it because protests were starting to mount in Los Angeles and Inglewood, and people were getting really upset at the whole issue. And I was on TV talking about it because I was really the only voice in the whole matter. Everybody's being very careful about what they said about everything, which should be.
Were they showing your videotape while you were doing these interviews?
Yeah, all the time. Like, yeah, I mean, the video was shown, like, on CBS. It was always shown. I mean, throughout the world it was shown.
Yeah. No, I'm aware that it's, at this point, it's been seen by a large, large number of people. But I'm just wondering, at this point in the story, because you were offered money for the videotape at one point, I'm just wondering how that worked out. Or were you paid for the use of this material at any point?
No, not really. Like, my main concern was that it got on TV. I thought it was an important issue that people be faced with, and especially after 9/11. I thought that it was something that people had to deal with and see, you know, what we're dealing with as far as police and control.
So you made a conscious...
So I really sacrificed, like, a lot of money off of the tape, like, ridiculous amounts, like selling it to, like, you know, network news television stations like CNN for like $150. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous when you think of in terms of how much money CNN is worth and how much they're willing to pay for, like, hurricane footage or anything like that. You know, so I really sacrificed a whole lot, and mostly because I just didn't really know what I was doing. And I think a lot of people make that same mistake, like, you know, if they, you know, sell their thing to America's Funniest Home Videos, they're still kind of getting robbed in the whole thing. It's kind of one of those things that we have to deal with in this new age of internet and technology and everything else. So,
right.
I sacrificed, and it really wasn't about the money to me. It was more important that, you know, one, that I got to get on TV and I got to talk about police brutality, something that I've always felt very strongly against. And two, that, you know, people can see, like, what we were up against after 9/11 and that police, you know, were taking their jobs a little too gung-ho. And I just wanted the discussion to start. And the discussion was what was quelled. That was what was shut down, and that's disappointing to me, because all I wanted, really, aside from a monetary value, was the discussion to start. Like, how do we want our society to be policed? I mean, what do we want from our police? What do we ask of our police? You know, and it just got kind of scrambled along the way.
So you're on TV. I guess it's fair to assume that the Englewood police watched television and figured out that you were the guy they were looking for who filmed the video in question. And they did take steps to acquire the... well, that's the way I'm going to say it. They took steps to acquire the videotape. But why don't you tell us about what happened to you next?
Well... you know, I spent the week on television, Good Morning America, different shows, you know, CBS Evening News, talking about the issue. And eventually, somebody in Placer County, California, had realized that I had had a four-year-old warrant for a DUI and a petty theft.
And who realized that?
You know what? I'd love to know.
Okay.
I'd love to know. It wasn't told to the DA. I have no idea. All I know is that I'm about to do an interview on BET with Ed Gordon in front of CNN Studios and a bunch of G-men in a black tinted windows, SUV, all dressed in black, no markings, no nothing. You know, guys show up at the scene, arrest me, don't tell me nothing at the time. Snatched the original videotape right out of my back pocket, throw me up on the car almost identically the same way that they did Sodom and Jackson, and drive me off into the district attorney's office. It's kind of like there's a couple different stories with that. I was subpoenaed over the air, through the airwaves, like we're talking now, which is totally illegal. You can't do that. It's totally wrong. You couldn't subpoena her right now if you wanted to. It's not wrong. You have to serve so many papers. Everybody knows that. And I didn't show up to the court after an interview that I did where I was cornered with the L.A. District Attorney. So that made them mad because I didn't show up and I didn't surrender the original videotape, because there was some question as to whether I only turned in the portion of the videotape that was just the infraction, or did I capture the entire beating from beginning to end. So they needed to know that. And they basically used the warrant that I had that was 4 years old that had come up several times. I was refused entry into Canada. It came up in New York, Albuquerque, South Beach, all over the United States. Never came up as a big deal. L.A., Sacramento, never came up. So when it did come up and they arrested me in front of CNN before I did the BET interview, they immediately took me off to the DA's office building and put me in jail, beat me up all night long, questioned me and gave me the whole Gestapo treatment, everything, like, you know, put me in a cell, put me on suicide watch, did everything they could to possibly, like, ruin my life. Like,
you were just
embarrassed me.
You were beaten.
Yeah, I was beaten, yeah.
Could you be a little more specific about that? Because I was not aware of that at all.
Yeah, I was actually put in the hospital. That actually was a report that got put out there for that. I was put out in the USC Medical Center, and they checked me in there. They had me tethered to a gurney. The police had grabbed me and threw me around the room, punched me in the face, dragged me, like, around all across chairs and stuff, and throwing chairs at me. So they checked me into the USC Medical Center. As I was in there, I was like, you know, the doctor came up to me. They had me tethered to the, like, gurney, like I was Hannibal Lecter or something. It was ridiculous. They were doing everything in their power to make my life miserable, to punish me for coming forward for the videotape. But, you know, playing that very, 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 very fine line that they always do. So, you know, the doctor checked me out and he's like, you know, you have a hip contusion, you know, you have a shoulder dislocation, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm telling you right now, I don't like any of this. I don't think you should have been arrested. I'm going to, you know, tell the rest of my staff to remember this day forever. So I'm put in the hospital because of these DAs and because of the police. Then I'm transferred overnight to the L.A. County Central Men's Jail. And, you know, they put me in a cell, just like Michael Jackson, with crap and feces and pee and everything, and take all my clothes off of me and leave me chained through the food door to the outside of the food door, where I can't sit down, can't stand up. Just basically stuck there with, you know, the handcuffs, you know, cutting into my wrists. I still have scars to this day from those, from the blood that was dripping. And left me there basically from about 2 a.m. to about 5 or 6 in the morning. Then a lieutenant comes in, takes me off the thing. It was torture, like, plain and simple, it was torture. They videotaped the whole thing, which is even more crazy. I'm sure it'd be difficult to find that videotape, but they set a camera up, so they videotaped me naked in a cell, handcuffed through the food door to the outside of the door, with blood, and I'm screaming help the entire time. I need medical help the whole time. They paid no attention to it. Around the next day, a lieutenant comes in and he says, "Oh, everything's gonna be fine. Don't worry. Don't worry about us. We just need to know, is that all the videotape? Is that it? You don't have any more videotape, blah, 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 blah." I was like, yeah, yeah, fine. So he gives me back all my clothes, puts all my clothes back on. He says, all right, you're going to fly back up to Placer County. They sent a private jet, They don't ever do this. They don't do this for felons. My crimes were misdemeanors. They don't do this for felons. They flew a private jet from Auburn, California, from Placer County, California, down to Burbank Airport, to fly me all the way back up there to serve my 6 months jail sentence on DUI and petty theft. They never do such a thing. They never do that. But they did in my situation because protests were mounting outside of Inglewood. The black community was upset. The local black community was vivid. They were storming City Hall. They were telling the mayor, look, you need to fire this officer. You need to, like, you know, bring charges down on him, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm, like, you know, left all the way up in this, like, 90% white county jail where all the officers are, like, completely pissed off that, like, I embarrassed them and brought them into the national, you know, debate on this whole police brutality issue. And, you know, they took it out on me for 6 months. I had to spend a six-month sentence in there, 23-hour lockdown. They would intimidate all my witnesses. They would never let me in or let me out for my hour during the day. It was just torture, the whole thing, from the moment I was arrested till the 6 months that I was out of there. It was complete torture.
We will continue with our interview with Mitch Crooks after this short break.
I don't think there would be a trial without the tape, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, if there was, I mean, I just don't think it would ever have come about. I just thought it was normal. I've seen this before happen in LA. I just happened to have a camera with me. And I mean, I thought it was too late, really. I didn't think I was going to capture anything at all. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I thought maybe something would come about. I was hoping that, like, you know, that he was all right and everything, because he looks pretty down and out, you know. Yeah, I've been victim of police brutality myself, so, and I mean, it's common in LA. I guess it's the right thing to do. I mean, I didn't think about, you know, my personal things that I had to face up to. I just thought about, you know, this is the right thing to do, is to come forward about it, and it was just uncalled for, you know. He was in handcuffs, there's no need to go any further at that point. Well, I just wanted to get it on TV. I mean, I just wanted people to see this, that, you know, this is a problem that we have to address. You know, it's 10 years after Rodney King, and we still have the same problem. In fact, it's getting worse. And, you know, I just feel it needs to be addressed, that's all. Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally believe that it was worth it. You know, I mean, I had to face up to, you know, the things that I had done at some point, and, you know, I definitely feel it was worth it.
Oh, he was most certainly targeted because of the video. This is a situation where a man put himself in harm's way, a citizen of the community, to bring widespread dissemination to a problem that is run rampant in this country, police brutality. I mean, police in this country have beaten citizens in different communities, whether it be New York, Los Angeles, or Detroit. And since the Rodney King beating, there hasn't been very much press on the issue. And because of that, you don't have the pressure being put on police departments to curb the situation. Officers are not being prosecuted. Officers are rarely being reprimanded. And I'll give you two examples. I have a client now by the name Gary Johnson, who was beaten unconscious by two members of the Inglewood Police Department. And this is after what happened to Donovan Johnson. And I can almost guarantee you that in that situation, nothing will be done to the officers unless there's some type of widespread detonation.
I hope that they make an example out of Jeremy Morrison. I hope that he goes and spends a lot more time in jail than I did. But I really don't believe that's going to happen.
Welcome back to Bad Cop, No Donut. I'm Ron Anisich. We now continue with our interview with Mitch Crooks. So on paper, you were locked down 23 hours a day.
Yeah.
But the reality is it was very often 24 hours a day. That's what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I'd say a majority of the time. Like, you know, and then they'd play games with the hour. You know, it was like, you know, when you only got an hour out, you need to shower, you need to make a phone call, you need to sharpen some pencils. You know, maybe catch a little television, grab some stamps, you know, do some talking with the rest of the convicts, you know, try to keep yourself safe in there. None of that. They would lock, I'd be in the shower with soap all over my face. They'd be like, lock down, you got to lock down, it's time to lock down, after like, you know, 10, 15 minutes. So they played games with it. It was just pure punishment all the way throughout. Like, it was like never ending and like, you know, there were several times where I just felt like giving up. Like, I just felt like, this is so unfair. You know, I thought I'd done something good for somebody, you know? I'm trying to expose an issue that we all need to talk about, you know? And this little poor little black kid, you know, got beat up on this police car, and now every police department in the nation is going to try to take it out on me. I just didn't understand all of that. Didn't understand. I thought the people were a little bit more compassionate and understanding about it. And, you know, it took a very strong will to survive through all of that. It was very difficult.
I imagine.
It was painful. It definitely took a strong will. And, you know, once I got out, you know, I was pretty okay with the whole situation. I, you know, some money had piled up from, you know, all the people that had actually paid me for using my video. You know, people were wanting me to fly out to New York and have exclusive interviews and, you know, those kind of things, you know. It's kind of nice you come out of a situation like that and makes you feel a little bit better about going through all that. You know, going out to New York first class and staying in a nice, you know, 42nd Street hotel, you know, high rise or whatever, you know, it feels kind of good, but, it, you know, that's that. You know, the things that have happened since then, it just is absolutely amazing. You know, you have to kind of question, you know, it's kind of a very, you know, it's, you have to think of an equilibrium of, is it worth it to videotape police? Is it not worth it? What's important to you? You know, you have to kind of like weigh all these things out, looking at my situation and what I had to go through. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm really happy about what I did. You know, I feel like I can die tomorrow, and, you know, I serve my purpose on Earth. But at the same time, I really feel for, like, families that I've heard of from, like, Stolen Lives Project and October 22nd Coalition. You know, some of the stories that I've heard since then and what I've had to go through just being a videographer and surviving, you know, somebody getting punched in the face and slamming on a police car. Some of the horror stories that some of these other people have gone through, and it just pales in comparison. You know, I can name a dozen to you of mothers that have come up to me at, you know, October 22nd protests and, you know, cried to me and told me what their story is, or gave me a DVD of their actual, like, execution. And it's just, you know, it's a very difficult situation to be in, you know, for somebody that, I mean, I was pretty much always against police brutality, but, you know, I didn't ask for this.
There's a couple questions I have at this point, actually. I guess the first one I'm going to ask is, I'm curious to know if you've attempted to take any legal action against the police officers and corrections officials who are responsible for abusing you?
Well, I was advised by my attorneys who were in connection, who were hired with the attorneys for Donovan Jackson, to not file any lawsuits because of the fact that they didn't want a bunch of frivolous lawsuits over the issue. And they basically had said that Johnny Cochran was in charge and that he would handle everything. Well, Johnny Cochran is dead. He's no longer with us.
Right.
My attorneys were told, you know, to make sure that, you know, I didn't file any copyright issues or, you know, I didn't file any complaints against the Sheriff's Department in Placer County or the District Attorney's Office in Los Angeles, because they didn't want the issue of a frivolous lawsuit coming up. So, no, I didn't, and, you know, I just dealt with it, and I didn't really have the money to seek an outside attorney to deal with the situation, so I just kind of let it go.
That must have been a difficult decision.
Yeah, kind of. And then, you know, and there are certain things, you know, where I think about, well, I could have gotten, you know, the millions of dollars that George Holliday did for his video of the Rodney King beating, you know, have it featured in a movie or whatever. And that part is, like, not really that important to me, really. It'd be nice to make some penny off of, you know, police messing up. But that's really not the case. Mostly because I didn't know what I was doing, and mostly because some miscommunication about with people, lawyers and politicians and stuff like that. It kind of seemed to me that, like, once politicians in the area, like Maxine Waters and Najee Ali and the current mayor of Los Angeles, kind of took hold of the situation and kind of took that press away and saying, you know, this is wrong, that it became more money in their pocket rather than it being money in my pocket, the person who made all the sacrifices and everything. Still to this day, you know, the family was rewarded $2.4 million for a federal lawsuit that they had for the violation of Donovan Jackson's civil rights. I haven't seen a penny of it. I haven't even gotten a thank you from the family. So, you know, those things are kind of difficult to deal with. And then I think about the officers who actually reversed and sued the city of Englewood for reverse discrimination because they were treated more harshly than the black officers that were at the scene of the whole beating on videotape.
They
were rewarded $2 million for their trouble. So it was like, you're rewarding officers for beating a suspect, even though there's no, you know what I mean, you're judge, jury, and executioner, whatever. And then right after that settlement came out was when Hurricane Katrina came and they beat the crap out of the guy in New Orleans. And it seemed to be happening over and over again in cities in Cincinnati and elsewhere and elsewhere and elsewhere. It just keeps happening. And I'm encouraged by the fact that, like, people have grabbed their cameras and are more aware of what police are doing in their neighborhoods and not so trustworthy of that every police officer is up to, you know, protecting you and everything. And you've seen a lot more of that. And the 10 years between Rodney King and the 10 years between my video, you didn't see a whole lot of that. And not even 1 week after my video came out, somebody had the courage to go out in Oklahoma City and videotape two white officers beating up a 250-pound black guy with nightsticks. So that, to me, is total payment. That, to me, is total payment. Look how many things on police brutality, how many videos we've seen. Look at, like, the New Orleans thing where CNN actually stood up, you know, to the New Orleans Police Department and showed that video where they could have quelled it. That is part of the problem, is that there's this gap between what the people believe and the citizens believe and what the citizens videotape and how they see their police departments and the way that the media, people like Anderson Cooper and stuff, are going to show it to the rest of us. That's really what the problem is. And most people are totally against police brutality. I mean, how can you be for police brutality? I mean you got to be a sick person to be for it. And that's really the struggle that's going on right now is, you know, between what the media feels like they could show, and what, you know, the citizens are asking questions about their police force, I think that it serves a purpose for the media more, because, you know, they can perpetuate this fear of violence from police, that if you are a criminal, the police will retaliate, and there's no ends to how they may retaliate. They may punch you while you're handcuffed on the back of a police car. They may slam you with all their force on the back of a police car. There may be six or seven of them standing around you, beating you with billy clubs or whatever. There may be a guy that just shoots you at point-blank range, like the U.S. Air Force officer that was shot, I believe, by the Pomona police, that was kind of like shown on CNN and then quickly went away. There's so many stories about how these police are so quick to react and use deadly force, and it seems to be escalating and escalating and escalating. And, you know, before people start getting organized behind this type of issue, the more and more it's going to be escalated. And, you know, the sacrifices that I've made and the sacrifices that other people have made to come forward, you know, are going to be gone. And it's really an important issue, because I don't hate all the police. I really rely on the police. We all do. But there is a line that you can't cross. It's called the law. And a lot of these officers, most of the time, they cross that line. And that's something that the rest of us all have got to unite behind and get together on and try to make some action happen behind that.
Well, I was staying in a hotel. I had just finished up a trip around the States. And I had my camera with me, and I was converting it to VHS in the hotel room. I was bored, and I heard a lady screaming. And by the time that, you know, I'd realized the key word, she said, "Don't resist." And at that point, I knew it had to have involved police. People just don't say that in a normal fighting situation. So I grabbed my camera, ran out there as fast as I could. Well, at some point, I realized that they had noticed that I had a video camera. And they all turned around, had scowls on their face, and they turned around, and I said, "The first thing I need to do is separate myself from the tape and the camera." And so I gave it to other people that were staying there in the hotel room. Mm-hmm. Seconds later, the police all come into the hotel looking for the videotape. And, you know, had they got the videotape, that would have been the end of that. I mean, it would have been over with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I ended up, you know, avoiding the police, and then I went to the media. No, it was to CNN. Oh. Yeah, they arrested me out in front of the thing. They wanted the original videotape, and they wanted me, because they said that the original videotape had to be used in the court, so as evidence. And I basically was uncooperative with them because I didn't work within their time frame. I wanted to speak to an attorney. Things were going really fast, and they didn't want me on TV talking about police brutality. That's really what it boiled down to. See, these things were not important, and I was, you know, let go by the police several times because they weren't that big a deal. But you videotape the police, then it becomes a much bigger deal.
To be honest with you, I don't completely understand it myself. To me, it was pretty clear that what the police did there was excessive and unnecessary. But I think there are a lot of people who think that just based on what police do for us and the kind of stresses they have with their jobs and that they put their lives on the line. There was one person who I won't name that said something almost exactly like, "These cops have to deal with scumbags every day. I'm not going to vote to convict one for anything." Oh yeah, he said, "I don't care if it's excessive or not. I'm voting not guilty." Juries being 12 people, I think that makes the odds really good that you're going to find at least one person that thinks that police shouldn't have to be held to the same standards that normal people do.
It surprised me to learn that you were still, after all the things you've seen and all the things that have happened to you, it really surprised me to learn that you still believe that there are good cops out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are. There are guys out there that really want to catch the bad guys. You know, there are guys out there, if your house is robbed, you know, think about that. Think about how I may feel, you know, if my house was ever to be robbed or that I was ever to be killed or something. Do I ever think there'd be a full investigation on it? No, there may be some police officers out there that may be, you know, just illed by my whole situation, my whole lifestyle or anything, you know, and may not, like, put their best foot forward in trying to protect the citizens or protect me from any type of harm like that. And there are good citizens, there are good soldiers in Iraq, in our military, there are good soldiers in our police force that really want to catch the bad guy. I'm not, like, saying that just because police officers beat a couple of people on video camera that all of them are bad. I'm saying that, like, when they are bad, we need to make an example out of them, just like we make an example out of the videotapes of people being beat up. We need to prosecute them. We need a separate, you know, police prosecutor, a district attorney that handles specifically for those type of cases. We need more than rubber stamp committees in each community of a citizen review board of police. We need some changes in that so that, you know, that all the police that, like, when they join the police force, that they want to do good for each other. They want to do good for each other. And not go, hey, that guy with the gold rims or the grills in his teeth, you know, that guy's up to no good. That guy may be up to no good, but, you know, there's tact about it. There's ways of going about doing it. And, you know, with police officers and all the abilities and all the freedoms that they've been given on our expense, as far as the Constitution goes, there's got to be some kind of trade-off there. There's, you know, I don't think that police have to be such assholes all the time. I don't know if you can say assholes, but...
You can on this show.
Yeah, I don't think you need to be assholes all the time. I don't think cops realize that just the fact that you've been caught doing wrong and you're going to have to go through court and go to jail and all that, sometimes I don't think they realize that that is punishment enough. That is just, like, that is horrible enough that you realize that you screwed up. And then cops want to pour more onto it by beating you up or neglecting you while you're in your cell or mistreating you or not giving you food or not letting you pee or, I mean, whatever the situation. And I think maybe, you know, the thing is to remember is that we can't, like, go without police. There's no way we cannot go without police. And yeah, we'd be an anarchy if that's the case. And although I am an anarchist and I truly believe in those philosophies, I don't believe that we cannot, like, do without police.
We need to be
better about the police that we pick. And when the police do screw up, we need to hold them to a higher standard than we do the citizens. And I think that's really what the key is. In all of my situation and in all of this whole discussion about police brutality and cops and everything, is that we need to hold them more higher to a higher standard so that when they screw up, if there's any question that they used a taser on somebody and it killed them and the guy was on crack, whatever, all that stuff that comes out, there needs to be, like, very, like, a serious prosecutor to examine all of those facts. There was a recent situation that happened here in Las Vegas where a handcuffed 17-year-old child, he was actually a murder suspect, which is why the press didn't pick up on it. He was shot in the back as they put him in the front of the car, of a police car. He put his handcuffs in front of the front of him and got out of the car and ran away. And the cops told him to stop twice, and they shot him two times in the back, shot and killed. 17-year-old kid.
Yeah,
had his day in court.
They shot and killed a 15-year-old here in Toronto just yesterday, unarmed.
Yeah, see, I don't know what it's going to take, if it's going to be like a 50 Cent rap song or Ice Cube to come back to some of his old material or a movie about it. I really don't know. Is Michael Moore going to have to deal with the issue? I don't know what it's going to take to make people realize that, you know, sooner or later it may be your son or daughter or child that may be the victim of something like this. And that's what it always seems like. That's what I come across a lot. Is that it seems to be families that have dealt with this. Good families, you know, good families, just the whole spectrum of people that, like, you know, their son was taken unjustly, and, you know, that seems to be the people that are more passionate about it. And when it's happening all over the country, and, you know, things get quelled in little cities like, you know, Toronto and Las Vegas that aren't very little cities. You know, I don't know what it's going to take, man. I really don't. I mean, I'm currently working on a documentary about my situation. It's been very difficult. I'm trying to spread that awareness and of what it is, and try to use that examples of, you know, that it could be your daughter, it could be your son next. And are you going to be all passionate about police brutality when it's too late? Because, you know, it's something that we have to address. And, you know, one important thing is that I got more interest from my videotape in England, in Germany, and France, in Europe, where there was where there is very little police violence. There is police violence, but not on nowhere near the scale that we have here. And it's such an important issue to the European Union, police violence. It is an incredibly important issue. Like, I've seen more active people on the net and on television and everything in the European Union than I do here. And they don't even nearly have the problems that we do. And they're able to see that, and they're able to start to judge about what kind of police force do they want and put it into action. And, you know, them, you know, being more interested in my tape and trying to show it and repeat it all the time and regurgitate that kind of argument all the time to their citizens is helping them create a debate where it's actually, you know, been in the parliaments and such, where it's actually become part of the discussion. Here in America, it's nowhere near close to being part of the discussion about how we want to treat our police and everything. So, you know, those are the kind of some things to take into consideration when you're, you know, thinking about all this stuff. See all of this stuff. I see it as, you know, I see I just don't live in a box. I live outside of it, and I see a lot of these things, and, you know, I see a lot of the stuff that's going on here in America, and it's just so not American.
Mitch Crooks is currently living in Las Vegas, Nevada, where he is working on a documentary about police brutality and his experience in Inglewood, California. Bad Cop No Donut is produced at CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto and can be heard on campus, community, pirate, and internet radio stations throughout the United States, Canada, and elsewhere. This show is available freely for nonprofit use. You can download the show, sign up for our email newsletter, support the show, read news, and find out more about this program at the show's website, www.badcopnodonut.fm. We value your input. Please send your comments or story ideas to ron@ckln.fm. Thanks to everyone who sent in articles for this week's program. I'm Ron Anisich. Thanks for listening.
I don't care if we fill the jails, arrest anyone, any rank.
We will make them see their injustice, and it will hurt, as all fighting hurts. But we cannot lose. We cannot. They may torture my body, break my bones, even kill me. Then they will have my dead body. Not my obedience.
I don't care if you kill the dream, through the dream.
Let us take a solemn oath that, come what may, we will not submit to this law. We will not submit to this law.
So you wanna be a cop? So you wanna be on the top? Arresting and shooting all the kids on the block. Incarcerate the youth of the next generation. And you get the high five at the police station.
So you wanna wear blue?
Pray on the people, come root the Constitution. We're all men so equal. Beat down the poor and the working class core. You're a class straight up on the fucking rich man's whore. Cause there's a thin blue line between the love and the hate. If you sold truth across it, you're a Nazi for the state. You're injustice, more precious, the precious of you. So you wanna be a killer for the red, white, and blue.
Little kids, you're a clown, keeping all people down. Nothing to attack when you think of the sex. You're your own damn brother, you got no respect. But the killing won't stop when you become a god. What good is matter and it ain't gonna stop. It's enough to matter on the way you do. What's your detail? You got a picture from society and it's your will.
Even the summer's a given this situation lies.
You got the upper hand in a war when you take away your arms and the boots go fly.
one shot you're grinning in the door shop. Your sickening behavior regulates this society. You muster all the sickness and hatred
so
inside
you wanna
of me.
Wear blue. Well, you're just a type. Got a chip on your shoulder and an itch for a gripe. Standing on a raft in an ocean of blood, but you're doing the killing and it costs your blood.
Yo, how can we tolerate this man? A piece of paper, think a cop. Never cycle to his death, you in the shower. Choking V, morning G, LOC, he never stop. And your death to be sweet if you wanna be a cop.
This is green and the sky is blue. Well, that's about right, cause we're below you. You got my extra attitude when you come down my block. So you wanna be a cop? What that is matter and it ain't gonna stop. It's enough to mind on the way you're doing. What you can tell? You got a vision for society and it's your will.
Even if I'm a son, you make it situation love.
You got the young bar and the wall when you drink away your arms and leave you
The function of a civil discourse is to provoke response, and we will continue to provoke until they respond or they change the law.